ProPublica report that Israel must be sanctioned. The U.S. must deprive Israel of funding and weapons without conditions immediately. Official recommendations are being completely ignored by Blinken, by Biden. All they do is lie. Students at Columbia University, many other universities engage in mass demonstrations, protests. I mean, student protests has been a historical part of resistance movements. A battalion gagged, handcuffed, and left an elderly Palestinian American man dead.
Hey, what year was that?
That, Michael, was in January 2022.
Wow. That's before October 7th, right?
It's almost like history didn't start on that day.
Zionists have a new calendar that starts on October 7th. They only acknowledge everything that happened after October 7th. They've actually abandoned the Jewish calendar and they have an October 7th calendar now.
I obviously want to start with the ProPublica report. We talked about it on the Patreon pod, but this needs to be in Palestine pod. So
get after it.
ProPublica report that came out, which is a searing indictment to the state of affairs in the U.S. right now. And this report is important because essentially what it demonstrates is that what we have been saying all along, that Israel must be sanctioned, that the U.S. must deprive Israel of funding and weapons without conditions immediately. All weapons, all funds must stop.
It's a classic case of we told you so.
Right. And it's actually an illustration that this position is not even an extreme position. This position, rather, is actually espoused by policymakers, government officials within the Biden administration at this current moment. And yet, those official recommendations are being completely ignored by Blinken, by Biden, and those who have the power to actually implement those recommendations. And so when we say Israel must be stopped, Israel must not receive any funding from the United States, Israel must not receive any weapons from the United States or any other country, when we have been making this analysis now for months.
Years.
But let's just say months in this current moment. Of course, this analysis has been made for years, for decades rather.
Well, you and I haven't known each other for decades, but you know.
But no, but the Palestine Solidarity Movement has been making this analysis for years.
No, of course. Just a little joke, huh? Just a little.
Palestinians have been saying for decades that Israel must not be assisted in any way in order to continue its occupation of Palestine, its settler colonial regime in Palestine, its apartheid policies against Palestinians. When we've been saying this, we've been right all along. And as always, it's just a matter of time before the official government position eventually catches up to what we have been saying. And so now what we see is that this is actually the position that's espoused by people within the Biden administration, but the genocidaires in the Biden administration refuse to comply with the recommendations of their own advisors. Let's look at the report. This report was published on April 17th, and it states that a special State Department panel recommended months ago that Secretary of State Blinken disqualify multiple Israeli military and police units from receiving U.S. aid after reviewing allegations that they committed serious human rights abuses. But Blinken failed to act on the proposal in the face of growing international criticism of Israel's military conduct in Gaza, according to current and former State Department officials. The incidents under review mostly took place in the West Bank and occurred before October 7th. They include reports of extrajudicial killings by Israeli border police, an incident in which a battalion gagged, handcuffed, and left an elderly Palestinian American man dead, and an allegation that Israeli interrogators tortured and raped a teenager. So just to remind everybody, both of these stories, the story of the elderly Palestinian American man who was executed by the Israeli occupation, and the Palestinian youth who was raped by Israeli interrogators, were covered on the Palestine pod. We covered both of them in real time when they occurred. Elderly Palestinian American man was named Omar Asad, and he literally was left on the ground to suffer a heart attack after he was beaten by Israeli occupation forces. He was initially stopped at a checkpoint, dragged from his car, bound in blindfold, and then left completely unresponsive overnight on the ground, at which point he suffered a heart attack attack and died.
Hey, what year was that?
That, Michael, was in January 2022.
Wow. That's before October 7th, right?
Yeah. If I'm any good at math, it would seem so.
I am not one of those Jews who's good at math, but I don't know. It seems like it's before October 7th to me.
Seems like it.
Weird.
Yeah, totally weird. It's like, it's almost like things were happening. It's almost like people were being violated, murdered. It's almost like history didn't start on that day.
Zionists have a new calendar that starts on October 7th. They only acknowledge everything that happened after October 7th.
Yeah, like a whole new calendar system.
They've actually abandoned the Jewish calendar and they have an October 7th calendar now. It's pretty cool. It's for sale at the Holocaust Museum.
Hello and welcome to episode 120 of the Palestine Pod, the weekly podcast where we break down the latest headlines dealing with Palestine from all over the world and bring you stories, commentary, and interviews with the aim of supporting the Palestinian struggle for decolonization, justice, and equal rights. I'm one of your hosts, Lara E. You might know me from Instagram as @GazanGirl, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mikey B.
What's up, y'all? Mikey B on TikTok, Michael Schertzer on Instagram, and you can call me Mikey Intifada. If you're not satisfied with kicking Palestinians out of their homes, now you're aiming for college students.
Before we get into today's episode, please like, comment, and subscribe if you hang out with us on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcast app, subscribe and leave a review. As always, you can find our full episodes and sources on palestinepod.com. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, reach out to us at palestinepod@gmail.com and give us a follow on Instagram @thepalestinepod. Find us also on Patreon, where you get early access to the Palestine Pod episodes. We do also an additional podcast per week. It's a little more laid back. We talk politics, Palestine, pop culture. We're also hosting our monthly Zoom happy hours with our Patreon subscribers only. So check us out on patreon.com/PalestinePod. Yeah. You know what's interesting is that when this story came out initially, the Israeli occupation forces acknowledged the soldiers' misconduct, saying their actions, quote, did not correspond with what is required and expected, end quote, of the Israeli military. But ultimately, they made a decision not to prosecute the Israeli soldiers involved because that's what they always do. Nobody is ever held accountable for killing Palestinians. And it's really interesting now to read this statement that their actions did not correspond with what is required and expected of the Israeli military after Israel has been conducting a 6-month-long genocide in Gaza, and after we have seen literally every nightmare scenario play out, most of it on video. And it just clarifies to you the extent to which everything they say is a lie. They lie all the time. All they do is lie. You can see it so clearly now because, you know, we have all been seeing the same scenes for the last 6 months. You look back and you read their former statements, and then you put that into context of what they're saying today, and you just understand that you can't go off of any of it. So let's go back to the article. The article continues and says that recommendations for action against Israeli units were sent to Blinken in December, according to one person familiar with the memo. They've been sitting in his briefcase since then. Now, this is really relevant for us. Why? Because December was before the ICJ order on provisional measures. It means that the US did not even need for the ICJ to order provisional measures in order to be put formally on notice of the risk of human rights violations, in order for them to need to reassess their complicity in assisting Israel commit these human rights violations. Because since January, when the ICJ order on provisional measures was rendered, our analysis has been, you guys are now on formal notice that you guys are assisting in genocide, and therefore you are complicit legally, and you could be held legally accountable for your complicity. But now the analysis is actually different, which is that you've known since December that you should not be funding or arming these psychopaths. You've known since December, according to your own internal State Department panel that recommended that you stop sending Israel aid. But you've done absolutely nothing. And so by the time the ICJ order comes around a month later, it should have been taken even more seriously, because now you have multiple credible institutions, individuals, groups that have recommended to you that you reassess your relationship with Israel. But what's happened since December and what's happened since January? The US has only continued to send Israel more money and more weapons. The latest weapons transfer was in March, and another one is being reviewed as we speak.
He's like, do you know how many papers I have in my briefcase? You should see what else I'm suppressing in there.
Yeah, look, I'm not like, yeah, probably. Like, that's not even a joke.
I mean, yeah, it is a joke, but it's also probably true. That's why I'm good at this. Thank you so much. He's like, I've got at least 7 documents that say lift the sanctions against Cuba and Venezuela. In my briefcase is the plan to end homelessness, not in America, inside occupied Palestine.
You know what else is crazy? It also means that every single time that Vedant Patel or Matthew Miller or any other one of these State Department buffoons got up before that podium, John Kirby, whoever one of those individuals, they looked the American public in the eye and they said something along the lines of, there's no proof that Israel violates international law. Anytime any one of those individuals has said that statement since December, which by the way, they have literally every week, anytime they're confronted with a new incident, gross violation of human rights by reporters, and they lie and they say, well, there's no proof. There's no proof Israel has violated international law. Anytime they've said that since December, they have looked the American public in the eye and they have lied. It's been a lie every single time because they've been sitting on this recommendation by a State Department panel to cut all funding and arms for Israel.
I would say better acting performance than La La Land.
I just want the American people who are listening to this to realize that their government is looking them in the eye every single day and lying to them.
And kind of like laughing at them too.
And taking them for idiots.
Like laughing at how stupid they are for accepting this narrative and for like regurgitating it and proliferating it, sometimes for money, but also sometimes for free because people are brainwashed. Everybody is sponsored by Lululemon. You need to stop consuming traditional Western media outlets because they are nothing but psyop brainwashing operations, literally run by the CIA. And that is according to former CIA agent John Blackwell. There is a video on my Instagram that he spoke about planting stories and convincing journalists and how eventually he didn't even have to do that because they were already integrated into journalism. He was like, ah, no, they just take the stories. We don't even have to plant them anymore.
And just so you guys know, the recommendations came from a special committee of the U.S. State Department called the Israel Lahey Vetting Forum. The panel is made up of Middle East and human rights experts. It's named after former Senator Patrick Lahey, the author of the 1997 laws that require the U.S. to cut off assistance to any foreign military or law enforcement units that are credibly accused of flagrant human rights violations.
The U.S. is like, I can't let the whole roster go. Not everyone, darling.
If these recommendations were made only on the basis of incidents which took place prior to October 7th, what do you think that the recommendations are going to be once the Lahey Forum in the U.S. State Department starts analyzing the Israeli occupation forces' behavior in Gaza since October 7th? Behavior which has been caught on film. Crimes which have been published online gleefully by the perpetrators. What do we think that they are going to conclude when they see Israeli soldiers firing tank shells at family homes filled with families in them, when they are seen and pictured walking around smiling like serial killers wearing women's lingerie, dead Palestinian women's lingerie, when they're seen sitting and sleeping in the beds of Palestinian children who they have likely killed and certainly displaced, when they are seen kidnapping puppies from their mothers and laughing, when they're engaging in all of the behavior that is typical of serial killers, right? Like torturing animals, taking entertainment and pleasure from wearing women's lingerie. I mean, this is all things that we have heard about that psychopaths, that serial killers engage in as behavior.
As well as killing a lot of people.
Oh yeah, this is all in the context of like a mass killing and torture campaign, right? So it's these clips of like them being entertained by and taking pleasure in the mass torture and killing that they're inflicting. And we've seen all of it.
It is Siderot cinema in IMAX.
Yes. And if you don't know what that is, Google it, because that too also happened prior to October 7th. Just listen to Palestinians, folks. We've been telling y'all this, and it's been our analysis. And as it turns out, my analysis is actually just the same analysis as the State Department Israel Lahey Vetting Forum. People who are experts that are tasked with simply applying U.S. law to U.S. policy. And it doesn't get more mainstream than that, folks. All we're asking the U.S. to do is apply its current laws and not violate its own laws.
We're like, hey, you guys are actually fucking up and we're trying to help you. And you're ignoring us and keeping that document in your briefcase and then lying to us every day gleefully. So what do you expect us to do? Just like chill and take that? Are you P. Diddy? Take that.
Are you P. Diddy?
Yeah, he's known for saying take that in reference to like raping people.
College students all across America have decided that they are not going to take that. And we have seen in the last few days, students at Columbia University, Harvard, Yale, many other universities walk out, engage in mass demonstrations, protests. At Columbia University, you had the Gaza Solidarity Encampment, where 108 students were arrested. Many were suspended and immediately required to vacate the premises of campus, kicked out of housing, lost access to dining halls and all student buildings. The university president at Columbia was quoted as saying that this was a, quote, extraordinary step that came after multiple warnings and when was necessary to provide a safe environment. Meanwhile, the NYPD, which she had tasked with carrying out this mass expulsion and arrest of students, actually said that they didn't find that there was any threat to safety or whatever, but that they were only there because the university president told them that that's what they needed to do.
They're just like, they're so reflexive about calling the police. Like, she's such a Karen. She's like, oh, I thought that's the process where, like, I see a protester, I call the police, they get kicked out. Also, isn't it just like Zionists to be kicking people out of their housing, even in America? Wow, they really export that culture, huh?
I don't know what they expect people to do. I mean, there are members of the U.S. State Department saying that the U.S. policy is violating U.S. law, and they expect the American people to just, you know, sit idly with that information and not engage in protests, which is like the bare minimum that they should be doing to voice their disapproval. It's the bare minimum.
And anybody who feels like doing more, you should do that too.
It's the bare minimum.
First of all, can I just acknowledge how smooth your transition was? You said, and college students are not gonna take it. That was like professional, like newscaster.
I just want to add that the Gaza Solidarity Encampment came after a pattern of repression was enacted by the administration against students. And this is really just a lesson to all of those who think that repression of Palestine Solidarity activists is going to intimidate them or get them to stop. It doesn't. It actually has the opposite effect. It creates greater bonds of solidarity, and it mobilizes people even more.
It's the Barbara Streisand effect.
Absolutely. These people in power need to realize that there is nothing that they can do.
I think she might be a Zionist. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure she is. I mean, the effect is still relevant.
Yeah, but I feel like I should acknowledge it. I don't know.
Oh, okay. it's a lesson to them, right? You can't stop a principled movement. You can't stop it because it's rooted in morality and principles and the belief that people have the right to be free. And on the other hand, US policy is driven by greed and the desire for power and the desire to steal and support repression,
control, and dominate, and destroy, and extract wealth and resources, and enslave people. They human traffic people all the time. These governments are the biggest perpetrators of human trafficking. Slavery, people. It's slavery.
In late 2023, Columbia University suspended Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace from the Columbia University campus. And earlier this month, in April, students, after organizing an event focused on Palestine, were told by the administration that that four students involved in the organization of that event were going to be evicted from student housing with 24 hours notice. Then a few weeks later, starting on April 17th, students at Columbia began the occupation of the east lawn of the campus, bringing tents and banners to establish a liberated zone in defense of students whom the university criminalized for protesting Israel's genocide in Gaza and insisting on divestment of their university from Israeli investments and full transparency on the university's investments. The next day, on April 18th, is when the Columbia University president, Minush Shafik, authorized the New York City Police Department to remove and arrest students in the encampments. And then the university further suspended many other students. It is interesting how you see this take place authorized under a university president who herself is a person of color, who authorized the NYPD to come in, who is right now being led by a police commissioner who's also a person of color, in a context where you have the Biden administration filled with people of color, all carrying out these genocidal policies, right? And that also is just another commentary on the fact that identity politics are not going to save us. People of color in positions of power are perfectly capable of supporting genocidal policies, policies of extermination against other people of color. And so we should not expect that just because somebody is from a certain background, in this case, university president is actually Egyptian American. We shouldn't expect any sort of sympathy or empathy from that individual just because of their background. And I think the Biden administration shattered any lingering belief that, oh, diversity is just all we need here to solve things. No, we don't need diversity. We need radical politics. We need people who believe in the liberation of all human beings and who believe that people are fundamentally born free and that we cannot pursue oppression as a form of governance. And unfortunately, you know, the color of your skin alone is not going to lead you to that analysis, and that there are many people who are colonized in the mind, and like Manu Shafiq, who will happily play along to support an administration's genocidal policies and ensure that her students' voices are not heard and that they are punished severely. But this is also an attempt by her to save her own behind, because she, along with other university leaders, were called to testify in Congress, right? Because at the same time, the U.S. is also engaged in this massive witch hunt that has led to the removal of two other university presidents on the false grounds of allowing anti-Semitism to proliferate on campuses when students are just asking for their governments and their schools not to support genocide.
Yeah, they're really making it seem like Jewish values require support for genocide, right? You would be understandably confused if somebody was like, hey, do Jews support genocide? Because, like, it seems like y'all have a real problem. Anyone tries to stop genocide. Anyways, I'd love to read a little bit of history about Columbia University. King's College was rechartered as Columbia College in 1784 and relocated from Wall Street area to what is now Midtown in 1857. So that means that Columbia, the university, started on Wall Street. This whole protest and encampment is reminiscent of the uprisings that happened at Columbia University in 1968. This is an article from Vanity Fair in 2018. The whole world is watching an oral history of the 1968 Columbia uprising. The whole world is watching an oral history of the 1968 Columbia uprising. In April 1968, hundreds of students at Columbia University took over campus buildings in an uprising that caught the world's attention. 50 years later, they reflect on what went right and what went wrong. At Columbia University in 1968, about 1,000 students forcibly commandeered five campus buildings, effectively igniting the mass student revolts of the 60s. I mean, I think Kent State probably had something to do with it, but, you know, whatever. The events that began haphazardly on April 23rd soon grew into a public crescendo of awakening that changed the course of the American student protest movement. It was a year when political, racial, sexual, and cultural forces exploded into a revolutionary volcano, as novelist Paul Auster, then a junior at Columbia, described it. It was also the year when two widespread movements, civil rights and anti-war, combined forces to stoke a flame of youth rebellion not seen domestically in half a century. That spring, 50 years ago, Columbia's impact, 6 city block campuses on Manhattan's bohemian Upper West Side, became a petri dish, fermenting and fomenting discord that would engulf the nation. By the end of the year, American deaths in Vietnam exceeded 35,000 soldiers. Anti-war protests multiplied. The draft continued to loom like a sword of Damocles over the lives of 27 million young men.
You made the essential point, right? Which is that students at Columbia are continuing a tradition of protest on their campus going back to 1968, which served as an inspiration for their current mobilization against Israel's genocide in Gaza. And it's really no surprise that students would do this, right? I mean, student protest has been a historical part of, you know, resistance movements in the United States. And I don't understand why they thought that they could support completely out in the open a genocide for the entire world to see, and that somehow they would sedate students all across the country into not mobilizing. Did they really expect anything different than this? It's obvious that where there is a policy of racism and repression and violence against civilians, that students are going to mobilize. And that's exactly what they did in 1968 when they occupied five campus buildings to protest the university's complicity in the Vietnam War and its racist policies. And that's exactly what they're doing right now.
And even furthermore, there is a connection between Wall Street and human trafficking. There's an article that's called, "For hundreds of years, enslaved people were bought and sold in America. Today, one of the sites of this trade are forgotten. And it is, won't you know, Wall Street." Because we talked about human trafficking, right? This is from an article, "The Hidden History of Wall Street's Slave Market," from The Street. "Most people think of the New York Stock Exchange when they think of Wall Street in Manhattan's financial district. The stock market at the exchange was built, like much of New York in the 18th century, on the back of the African slave trade economy. On December 14th, 1711, a law passed by the New York City Common Council made Wall Street the city's first official slave market for the sale and rental of enslaved Africans and Native Americans. The slave market stretched from Pearl Street to Water Street at the time. Water Street was located on the edge of the pre-dredged Lower Manhattan. Today, the only reminder of Wall Street's history in the slave trade is a small plaque at the bottom of Wall Street that was dedicated in 2015. The enslaved market operated between 1711 and 1762, and New York City remained a key hub for the trade of humans through the 1850s. But its legacy has been buried so deep that most people don't know it existed. And so it's like, okay, let's wrap it all up with a bow, right? You have the site of an enslaved market where people were human trafficked. Africans, people, Native Americans, people were trafficked. And then you turn that area into a college for education for the white settlers. And then it moves from that location, but it doesn't lose the values of where it came from, of the type of things and institutions and business models that it supports. So that is proliferated at the university. White supremacy is proliferated at the university. And then this university represses its students in a way that's been done before that elicited popular revolt from the students. And then they're like, we're going to hit it with a sequel. We're going to do it again. We've learned literally nothing. It's all connected.
I want to talk about the West Bank too. I think it's really important for us not to take our eyes off the West Bank. And the reason for this is because Palestinians have been telling you that every single thing that Israel gets away with in Gaza, they're going to replicate in the West Bank, and then they're going to export for the world as a precedent, as a technology, as a way of killing, and that the consequences of the Gaza genocide are going to go reverberate far beyond Gaza. Well, it just so turns out that the Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention has issued an active genocide alert over the situation for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The Lemkin Institute said earlier this month, Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians across Palestine. Last week, violence against Palestinians escalated very sharply as large groups of Israeli settler mobs launched attacks against at least 17 Palestinian villages. Settlers killed thousands of chickens and dozens of sheep and stole others. They blocked entrances to villages, set Palestinian homes on fire, burned hundreds of olive trees, injured dozens of Palestinians with live ammunition and destroyed private Palestinian property, including cars and livestock pens. The settlers were, as usual, often accompanied by and protected by the Israeli military. In total, between the 12th and the 15th of April, 7 Palestinians were killed in the occupied West Bank, including at least 2 children. This is happening in parallel to one of the largest land grabs in Palestinian history that also took place in the occupied West Bank at a time when the world's attention is turned to the Gaza genocide. So Israel is ramping up its policy of land theft. It's ramping up its policy of killing Palestinians, destroying Palestinian property, burning Palestinian agricultural land, and committing mass violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
And that is actually a demonstration of how it's on its downfall, because it is lashing out viciously as much as it can before it crumbles. And for more coverage on the sieges on the West Bank, Wally Rashid is covering the attacks happening on his family on Instagram and on TikTok.
Yeah, so I just want to say there's a ton of details to go into here on this. We don't have time to get into everything, but if you want more information on the ongoing attacks carried out by Israeli occupation forces against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, please check out Tamar Nassar's article on the Electronic Intifada entitled Genocide Alert Issued Over Israeli Violence in the West Bank. I also want to cover Netanyahu's recent statement about settlements in the quote-unquote Gaza envelope. He recently came out after meetings with UK and German government officials.
The only ones left who will still talk to him. It's like such a small circle of people who will still fucking talk to this guy. His calls are being ignored by the majority of people, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true, right? It's the entire world against a few very powerful Western countries and Israel. That's it. It's literally the entire world. And in most cases, it's just the entire world against the United States. And probably no better indication of that than the recent vote at the UN for Palestinian statehood that took place at the UN Security Council, where you had 9 votes in favor. You had a couple of abstentions, and the only veto that happened was the United States yet again. And so it's really reflective in that moment of the US's isolation. It really is the US against the rest of the world. And the reasons that the US put forward are absolutely abysmal and completely not credible. And nobody who has 2 brain cells believes anything the US is saying anymore.
Most people are clearly only working with one.
Right. I'm like, what? Yeah, 1 brain cell. It took me a while to get that on my own. So Netanyahu announced plans to rebuild the settlements surrounding Gaza with a $5 billion investment from the United States. And I just want to remind everyone that the land that those settlements are going to be rebuilt on is the land that Palestinians from Gaza were ethnically cleansed from in 1948. Their homes were stolen. They were never compensated. They were expelled into Gaza and made refugees, and they were prevented from returning to their land in violation of their internationally recognized right of return, which continues to be violated every single day since their expulsion.
Yeah, when he's like, we will rebuild, he means settlements, not hospitals.
Yeah.
Folks, that's been another episode of the Palestine Pod. Thank you all so much for listening. Check out our full episodes and sources at www.palestinepod.com. Send us an email at palestinepod@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at the Palestine Pod. Look for us on Patreon, www.patreon.com/PalestinePod. That's been another episode of the pod. Thank you all so much. Have as good a day as you can.
We can start telling people to join the Patreon. The show wouldn't be possible without a Patreon. You gotta get on our Patreon. Support us on Patreon. You can, you know, because like I've been watching all these other podcasts and they just keep plugging Patreon like all the time.
Yeah, I'm gonna clip what you just did right now.
Okay.